Congratulations, Lime Fighter. Today you had the courage to open your eyes and face another day. Welcome to Lime Voice. This show's purpose is to help you put the puzzle pieces of Lime into place. Each episode is designed to inspire, educate, and encourage you on your Lyme journey to wellness. Together we will fight. Together we will heal. Together we will live. Here are your hosts, Aaron and Sarah Sanchez.
Wishing your doctors could communicate and come up with a cohesive plan specific to your medical needs and genetics? At Invita Medical Center, they offer a team-style approach, giving you the opportunity to heal. In addition to a commitment of providing radical love and care for their patients, they are strategically located in sunny Arizona because Arizona offers the best integrative medical laws in the country. Call today to speak with one of their patient care coordinators. You can find them online at Invita.com.
Lyme Voice thanks Invita Medical for the continued support. Please reach them at 1-866-830-4576. Welcome, Lyme Voice listeners. So happy to have you here today. Good job on facing the day and taking the proactive step of listening to us and learning how to fight, heal, and live. So today's episode is with Renee, and this is just a really affirming message. It's not a fun episode, but it's a good episode. She just really talks about and is really open and honest with us about the struggles that she's had. And they're significant, much like many of you out there who are dealing with these issues day to day.
Unfathomable issues.
Yeah. Things that we would have never thought.
Never.
Yeah.
And what Renee shines a light on is they're dealing with congenital Lyme. Mm-hmm. And it's much more severe.
Yeah.
There's a lot more neurological problems. And as she was telling her story, I was just dumbstruck at like the level of suffering. I feel like within the Lyme community, we have all suffered so much that we're somewhat used to it. And the magnitude of fighting that they are having to go through every day, every bedtime, from multiple people in their family, it's just astounding.
Yeah. So I hope you guys enjoy this and it does encourage you. Because there's just nuggets of survival and of wisdom that can only be brought to someone who's walked this path. So I think it'll be really good. If you guys haven't already checked out Little Bite Big Trouble on Amazon, it's Sarah's children's book, and it deals with Lyme and how and her recovery story. And it's written and illustrated in a really beautiful way. I think you guys are going to enjoy it.
Yeah, it's cute.
Don't forget to go to Lyme Voice and sign up for our newsletter. We'll send you our other project, Disappearing from Society, a 20-minute documentary dealing with Lyme. Very encouraging, very well done. Took a good portion of 6 months to make, which is actually not very long. Good job, babe.
Oh, it was Mackenzie. She's awesome.
Yeah. But everybody that's seen this video, this documentary has just been floored on the amount that's in it. Even people that don't understand Lyme coming away from it saying, wow, I had no idea what you guys have gone through. I mean, those kind of statements were really important for us. And I think the documentary itself will be encouraging as well.
Yeah. It was meant to bring an awareness and an understanding. And I think that it does that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, enjoy this episode and we'll talk to you soon.
Hi.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. I've never done a podcast before, so I was a little, oh my God, what do you do?
Well, it should be pain-free.
Yeah, I'm doing a lot better. This morning was a little rough with, I think the moon hitting, but things better now.
Well, good.
Yeah. So I was trying to write down a few notes because earlier I'm like, I wish I was talking now because I've got all these things just flowing away. But I tried to keep them in my head. But yeah, I'm sure it'll be fine.
Okay. Well, and really, I mean, I'm mostly just looking for either moments of insight that have helped you or the reality of, you know, finding treatment where you guys are at. And we don't even have to say your last name. It can just be Renee,
okay,
depending on what you're comfortable with. So there's no parameters. And usually when people start talking, it is, mm-hmm, really easy. And then those moments or those aspects come out. So really, there's no set format. Whatever, okay, you want to share is what we'll put out there.
Okay. Well, I think that if it was, maybe if I explain kind of what it's like, maybe, and then end off on a good note, because, yeah, I hate to, I mean, I like people to understand that, yeah, I know, you know, we know how it feels, but it's not all, you don't want to leave it all in that, you know, doom kind of and gloom state.
Right. Yeah.
Hey, we can get there on our own fast enough.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I think, and too, with the name, just because we're having a hard time with the doctors and stuff right now, and I've got that fear in me of the whole, just, you know, them coming after us because we're treating the kids on our own kind of thing.
Yeah, and that's understandable.
Yeah, so I think, yeah, just for now, I mean, I like to be, you know, kind of feel like I'm, no, it, you know, it shouldn't matter and we'll go, but, and do it anyways and put our name out there. And then sometimes I kind of pull back and like, okay, I gotta not, you know, put us at risk too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So, we didn't get to interview him, but about 2.5, maybe 3 years ago, there was a dad who, his son was taken away in the hospital. They took custody of his son and the guy ended up going to jail for a year.
Oh my God.
I know.
That just makes me so angry.
I know. It was insane because here he is advocating, fighting for treatment. They're telling him it's all in his head and it was here in the US. And so they took custody of his kid. He went to jail for a year, got out, got his kid back, and he had contacted us. He must have heard the podcast or something. Mm-hmm. And rightfully so, he was like, yeah, I don't want to be interviewed. Thank you.
Wow.
You know, he was willing, like, he was basically like, I don't have the energy to deal with this. Like, I'm just trying to fight for my son. And I'm like, yeah, I get that.
And, you know, like, nobody, like, people don't understand that never will they ever get that year back. And that, you know, like, that time. And that, like, nobody, there's no amount of money, even if he gets money later down the road for compensation for the year, like nothing will ever bring that time back and the stress and the like, oh
yeah, I know.
So mad.
I know, it's heartbreaking.
Well, and the thing that we're battling right now is, like, you know, it's like they sit there and, like, we know now about all the vaccines and the pharmaceuticals and how damaging they are and everything, and it's like they just shove that down your throat, and then anything natural, it's like they think you're Satan for using it. And it's like, oh my God, have you guys, like, I just want to say to them, like, have you looked into this yourself, like, before you're saying it's bad?
Right. Well, like, no.
You know, and it's like, so don't, like, I'm starting to, like, I have to always bite my tongue because I'm on the edge of just going, okay, wait a minute, you know, and just telling them exactly what I think, but.
Yeah, it's a hard balance because you need them to cooperate with you in order, mm-hmm, to get adequate care. And yet really you're doing this little dance.
Oh, and it's so much time consuming.
Yeah.
You know, all the stupid appointments just to make it look good for them. So they don't, you know, have more strikes on your file. Like, it just seems so, so wrong.
Yeah.
But yeah, like our neurologist and stuff, like, he kind of makes me nervous because he's a pretty big name from the States. We got him at our, and he came down and I mentioned that the Lyme word, and he fired us pretty much after that.
Really?
Yeah. Was like, well, there's nothing more we can do. And it's not Lyme, like, it's not, and blah, blah, blah. And meanwhile, we had two neuro psych evaluations on our son, our oldest, and both said, like, waxing and waning encephalitis and something, like, you know, of unknown nature caused blah, blah, blah. And they'd said possibly showing signs of secondary ADHD to an underlying cause of whatever it is, that like either the epilepsy he was having at the time or something, right?
Yeah.
And then we actually told the neuropsych when he was, because he says, you know, you need to be the squeaky wheel. You gotta get out there, because we don't think there's any brain damage now, but time's of the essence, kind of thing. And so like that just sat ringing bells in my head. But I had mentioned something like that to the neurologist, and he's like, oh, well, who's this guy? What, you know? And before, that's their go-to guy to kind of see what's going on for the kids. And then all of a sudden he has no credibility.
Yeah. You know,
it's like they totally dismissed him. And before that, this guy said, you know, I'll help any way I can. You can call me at any time. I've made several calls to him since. He won't return my calls now. Like, he obviously got the big, you know, how dare you, like, tell them to go ahead with this kind of preposterous or, you know, thought or whatever, that it could be Lyme.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what kind of access to care do you guys have then?
Right now, we're pretty much... like nothing. Like, so I guess I should start back with the way it all kind of came together.
Give us an overview of where you started and how long it's been and all that.
Okay. Well, so I, now knowing, probably had it either congenital myself or got it very, very young. I noticed things change it was like night and day for me. Grade 4. It was all of a sudden, like, I just couldn't deal with my emotions and stuff.
Hmm.
And I don't come from, like, you know, we had a cabin by a lake. We snow skied. We did all this stuff. We were, you know, nothing was wrong in our family, kind of thing. And all of a sudden I started doing just one day I remember sitting in the bathroom, my sister and I kind of got in this argument and I couldn't deal with the emotions. And I went in the bathroom and took a razor and just kind of cut my wrist.
Hmm.
And after it, but it was the only thing, like, it just kind of calmed everything. And I was able to kind of just relax. And that wasn't me. Like, that was, you know, something that before wouldn't even have crossed my mind. And it was like night and day. And I used to get lots of fevers and febrile seizures and stuff like that, and always sick. And I was sick right before kind of that shift that happened. So I don't know if that's either when I got infected, kind of, because we had a cabin out in BC, which it's like right in the woods. That's when I got infected, or if that was something that shifted in my immune system, or I don't know what. But after that, my body ached all the time. Like, the everything hurt, the muscle, joint, back pain, kind of thing. I had depression then, kind of on and off, kind of like that sad, I guess it came with the, as soon as summer was over.
Hmm.
And yeah, and then all through, like, going all through high school and stuff, we'd went to every specialist to try and figure out what was wrong with my back, because I couldn't sit still. I was always like trying to adjust and crack my wrists and my elbows and my neck, and because everything was so stiff all the time.
Yeah.
And just hurt, like, you know, my ankles, I'd be rolling. And my mom was just like, you know, can you sit still? And you just, like, even just sitting there, you're just always twisting.
Which you do when you're in pain.
Yeah. And that just, and then it just kind of got to the point where, so we'd been to so many specialists, and it was the same thing that everybody always ends up hearing, that it's all in my head and I should go to a psychologist. So then that went down that road of psychologists and psychiatrists and every SSRI under the, you know, which never worked. They just, like, made me pack on weight or, you know, brutal side effects, but they never took that edge off the, and it wasn't that I was, like, depressed, but just nothing was right. Like, I was in pain, and, you know, not that I still went out with my friends and kind of kept up to everybody, but I just didn't feel right. Like, I always just felt, because you're so exhausted and you're just trying to keep up to be normal because you think everybody else probably feels this way too.
Yeah.
So if they can do it, I should be able to do it. And so anyways, a fast forward, kind of like after the first two kids we were the one, my oldest was 6. And prior to that, like, they had countless ear infections, countless, like, fevers, you know, anything went around. Our family would get it, and we'd get it, like, 10 times worse than anybody else. Like, one family might start something with the sniffles, and our family would go into full on like 5-day flu and, you know, in bed and feeling like death kind of thing. And
yeah.
And the kids were always like countless, always sick, and 105 fevers and rashes and weird things always happening. So I got to the point with all, just even with that, like I'd kind of, the joke in our family is, you know, that I'm this kind of bubble wrap, like trying bubble wrap the kids. But I'm like, yeah, you guys don't understand though. Like, you guys will have maybe a, you know, throwing up in the family, like one person will get it. It'll be one night. Like, ours takes it to the level of where we're, you know, we're looking for suppositories to try and, you know, because it's been going on for so long that we have nothing, you know, we're going to have to go to be hospitalized to get intravenous to get fluids in us. Like, it's always like extreme. And so like that anxiety of being around like any, if someone had brought a sick kid, I'd be like, oh my God. Like, and it turned me into like this total freak. Cause I'm like, I don't have the energy or the reserve to deal with this, to, you know, to play nurse for 24/7, you know, days a week. And well, it goes through our whole family and takes me out at some point. So I became kind of like a freak about it. Like, I remember Play Places was just like a, you know, where you hear the sound like the horror movie. Like, I'm just looking around. I'm like, oh my God, it's like they're in disease land. Like, and I wasn't like that before. Even as a sick kid, it didn't bother me being around people that were sick. But after dealing with all of us like that and having to, you know, be up all nights when you're already have no energy, I was like, oh my God, I can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
But that was all, of course, pre-Lyme. Now it's 10 times worse, but it's, or pre-knowing that we had it. But anyways, then my son started, he got these, which I now think was probably that Rocky Mountain Scarlet Fever. Hmm. He had all those, like the rashes. I should have taken pictures, but I didn't take, right? Maybe I did, I can't find them. But the pictures of his rash is identical to the ones you see. Spotted, and he, first they thought it was, can I say the word, the pet, some, it's like the kind of pinhole, what's the rash called? Anyways, we'd had him in the hospital several times because he kept getting it, and then he'd get these 105 fevers that I couldn't kind of bring down. And they ran all the tests. They had him in eMERGE several different times, and they just were like, well, we don't really know what it is, and, you know, kind of go home.
Wow.
They think first come back, but yeah. And then all of a sudden, one day, we were sitting there, laying on the couch, and I look over and his eyes are wide open and really big, but he's not moving. And I was like, you know, we sat him up and we're like, Andrew. And he just, nothing, just straight ahead. Like, he wasn't there anymore. He was completely gone. And like, he'd look right through you. And this went on for about 10 minutes. And I called,
oh my gosh, I bet you were horrified.
Oh, I was freaking out because, like, we'd call his name and there was no response. Like, guys, you know, I was kind of shaking him a little bit and, like, nothing, just nothing. He was just not there. And so we called the HealthLink, has this thing to, you know, they kind of evaluate with a nurse. And they said, you know, maybe you should take him in. And so we started driving him in, and traffic was really bad. And then we thought, you know what, we're never going to get through this. And he's still not responding to us. And now this is like 15, 20 minutes. He's still just blank staring. He's not talking. He's not doing anything. So we called the ambulance. The ambulance came, and they, you know, within about 5 or 10 minutes, he started kind of coming around and he was starting to talk and stuff. But so then it was like, well, you know, when kids get up from naps, they're kind of groggy. And I'm like, this was not groggy. This was like, I know my kid and I've got two of them. This is my first rodeo kind of thing, you know, something was wrong with him. And it was totally, you know, that was one of our first experiences of really bad people working in the industry. But she was like, oh, great. So now we're going to have to try and get through traffic and just kind of, you know, like we're wasting their time completely.
Wow.
So we get in there, they run a bunch of tests. We don't find anything out later, or that time. Then he we were skiing one time and he started going towards a, like straight for a tree. And I'm like, I was kind of behind him because he took off a few seconds before me. And I'm yelling and yelling and yelling. I'm like, stop, fall, do whatever, turn, something. Like, and he wasn't, he was just like full tilt straight for this tree. And so then I like kind of got my speed up and I went to kind of take my poles to curb him and wiped us both out. And he, that then he came out of it and he was like, you know, screaming and crying and mad at me because I, you know, squashed him, but he was going for the tree. So again, something I was like, what is going on with him? Like everybody's like, oh, he's just a boy. He's just going fast. I said, no, he wasn't, like, again, he wasn't there again. Like I could see it in his face again. And so then another time he came to this, and this one always gets me, but he came, he's in grade one. He left the, he left school and I opened the door and he's standing there just bawling. And I'm like, oh my God, what are you, like, what are you doing here? And he just stared, like, you know, he wasn't in that blank stare, but he wasn't with it.
Wow.
And yeah. And I just, oh, my heart broke because I'm like, he had to cross a busy street. He still to this day has no idea how he got home.
So do you feel like he's almost in a sense blacking out?
Well, it's at that time we suspect it was, and now, and see, I still don't even know if it ever was, but it came out after that he did an EEG and he had, they diagnosed him with epilepsy, like complex partial absence seizures.
Okay.
And so, I mean, those ones can be exactly that, where they don't remember anything or they don't, and usually he didn't, like he wouldn't remember anything. And, but it's interesting because they never, ever once, like in over 6 years, we did, I don't even know how many EEGs, we did like week-long VEGs and like where they do a video, he stays in the whole hospital the whole time and they just record his brain. Not once did he ever have a seizure on like paper.
Yeah.
And his, he'd always have like spikes and waves and lots of activity, but like they basically told me his brain was on the verge all the time. Hmm. And that's what they'd see, but they didn't actually see a seizure. But I mean, we all saw them like enough where he would just kind of, you know, I have video of it too, where he would kind of, you see him drop out and then come back in.
Yeah.
But through research, like I've found out that there's a lot of connection with like the complex partial absence seizures and Lyme.
Oh yeah. And
yeah,
just through the podcast, we have talked to so many people who have dealt with seizures. I dealt with seizures, but again, never showed up on paper anything. And yet people are admitted to the hospital all the time because they're paralyzed. And
yeah.
But then if you can't find an explanation, then you're just told to go home.
Yeah. Or it's, you know, you're faking it or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. I wonder what that is then, that why it doesn't show up, because you're not there. Like I've had the seizures too, where I go paralyzed and I can't move and can't talk. But like, I wonder why it doesn't show up on anything. They must be doing like the bacteria must be like either halting stuff maybe, or I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
And it's funny because, well, it's not funny, but every time, you know how you go into a specialist, you have to repeat your whole story to, you know, four different people before you even see the doctor, and then you repeat it to the doctor.
Yeah.
And I have told his story, I don't know how many times, like, and I'd always say, it always started with those rashes and that those fevers, like always. And you know, and they never, and I'm like, you know, why, what's the why? And they're like, some, you know, kids just get epilepsy sometimes. This just happens. And that was never good enough for me. I was always like, no, I want, like, no, that's not, it doesn't just happen. There's got to be a reason. There's got to be something that, you know, and we're never going to fix him because we tried all these different epilepsy medications that came with brutal side effects.
Yeah.
And nothing worked. He wasn't, you know, he was supposed to be that open and shut case. And nothing ever worked. So
you're dealing with their medical stuff, but you yourself have your own fatigue issues still at this point?
Yeah, always that. At this point, it was still, I was still managing things. I mean, I still had the pain, you know, but that's something that I just learned to live with through life, you learn to deal with it because you have to. Nobody yeah. believes you anyways, and you got to deal with it. So I had, that was okay. The fatigue was always there too. Like, I just always felt run down and beat down and just, you know, not really enjoying. Like, I was having fun through life, but not truly enjoying life, I guess. But
I don't think you can really be joyful within your life when you are suffering.
Yeah. No, it's always like a big cloud.
Yeah.
And you almost feel like you're being fake because you're, you know, on the outside, you're laughing and kind of whatever, but in the inside, you just don't feel right. Like, you feel like you're almost putting an act up and nobody really knows who and what's going on, like how bad it is inside. Because they don't see the pain, of course, and they see you doing everything, but they don't realize how much effort
yeah.
it takes to do everything.
Yeah.
And you think that everybody else has got that same, you know, at the time, I thought everybody else is struggling that much to do everything too, so don't whine about it.
Yeah.
So with us too, when we all kind of got sick, and we're still trying to figure out what brought us down to this point, because yeah, I've always managed it through life. And then it came to my son was in grade 5, and too with the other kids too, like, they've always had issues. So we've got my son, then my daughter's 2 years younger, and then we have the 5-year-old twins. So 13, 11, and then the 5-year-old twins. And everybody has, like, two of the kids have chronic unexplained stomach aches to the point of, you know, hospital bound kind of thing sometimes. And one of them has, I'm pretty sure, like, they have at night, I've recorded so many times, the twins don't stop moving. Like, they're jerking. They almost look like they're having, like, those sleep parasomnias or something. Like, they're not moving. So they're like, and we got that kind of checked out, and it's, of course, they couldn't find anything. It was nothing. It's fine. Kids move in their sleep. Well, this is,
it's like, not moving. Yeah. It's no. twitching and flailing yeah. and yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's, you can see there's a problem, but, and then the one of our twins also does the same thing that the older boy does, that goes into those blank out kind of things. And he's super hyperactive. Like, he cannot stop. Like, he's on, you know, like, I don't know, like a whole cupboard full of like sweets all the time. Like, he's, you know, bouncing off the walls kind of thing to compare it. But anyone, like, we're like, okay, come on, calm down a bit. And he just can't stop. So he's got that. Then, yeah, then we've had countless time, strep in the house, and kind of just everybody's sick all the time. There's always something. So we had one of the teachers at the school, because all of a sudden, out of nowhere, my son's, the oldest, started cognitively declining. Like, he was losing stuff that he already knew. Like, the school had wrote letters to the doctor saying, okay, something's, we got to help this kid or figure this out. Something's wrong. And, you know, like, at home, like, he just, like, he couldn't finish sentences. Even doing, like, the normal routine where you get up, brush your teeth, or, I mean, eat, brush your, you know, yeah, brush your teeth, get dressed, whatever it is. The same, yeah. You know, there's 4 things he has to do in the morning. And he couldn't do that. Like, I would say, okay, go brush your teeth. And then I'd find him in the hall just standing there staring. Like, he wouldn't know what he was supposed to do next.
Hmm.
And he, information that he had learned along the way, and he's a very, like, smart kid, and he didn't have it. Like, he's like, I don't even know what, you know, sometimes 2 + 2 is anymore. And he looked just horrible, like, all the time. He always looked flush. He always looked just beat down.
Hmm.
And it got to the point where he couldn't even attend school anymore. Like, they're like, you know, maybe if we let him sleep in for, like, let him get it up when he gets up and then come in. Because getting him up in the morning and drag him there, we're not getting anything out of him. He's just, like, got, like, they had an aide kind of working with them. They weren't getting anything. And so then we were doing the let him sleep in, and he'd go to school, and within an hour he's laying in the nurse's room. Wow. And yeah, just, like, you know, he's blacking out. He's getting dizzy. You'd go to talk to him, and he was just like, it was scary, because that ringing in my head was, that squeaky wheel comment about his neuropsych. Like, it hasn't caused brain damage yet. And I just, and then having no one to, like, everybody's like, well, we'll send him to this specialist. It'll take, you know, 3 to 6 months to get in. And I'm like, we don't have 3 to 6 months. Like, he's, do you get how fast he's declining? And so for 2 years, he pretty much missed, after the first year of missing a lot, like 90% of school, the principal kind of pretty much said, like, I think the best thing for you guys is to homeschool because he's not getting anything done here, kind of thing. So we homeschooled him, which was a disaster. It was kind of a half homeschool, half school thing.
Yeah.
And that was a disaster because then, like, when I say that shark circling kind of comment.
Yeah. Tell us that analogy that you came up with.
Well, I was asked in a group if we could tell people that don't have Lyme what Lyme is like, just a, you know, one thing that we popped in your head. And I just said it felt like it's like you're left in the water at night in the ocean kind of thing. And, you know, you see the safety boat way in the distance, like leaving. You can kind of see the light and it's getting, you know, less and less. And your body hurts. You're in the cold. You're scared. And there's just really, you're losing hope. And but somehow you got to, you know, and then I said that it feels like, you know, then you can hear or you feel the sharks start circling in, coming around you. Can't see them, but you can feel it. And then, you know, you got to figure out how to save yourself because you know that your kids are out. They got thrown off the boat too somewhere and they're out there and you got to save yourself to save them because the sharks are circling around them too. And that's, it sounds kind of dramatic, but it's so feel.
For nearly 2 decades, Invita Medical Center has been leading the way with the latest in personalized treatment options designed for patients dealing with Lyme disease complex. At Invita Medical Center, they offer a team-style approach and the latest technology regarding treatment and testing at an unmatched, radical love and care environment for their patients. Call to speak to one of the patient care coordinators today to learn why hundreds of patients choose Invita Medical Center each year. You can find them online at Invita.com.
From the creators of Lyme Voice and disappearing from society comes a brilliantly simple idea. But this time, it comes as a book. Imagine a world in which birds can talk like people. You'll get a bird's eye view of life with Lyme disease, as one bird family must unite to overcome the obstacles of life with Lyme disease. Guaranteed to make you laugh and make you cry. Written in a way that helps you articulate the losses you are experiencing as a household, while simultaneously empowering you to keep fighting. Little Bite, Big Trouble is available today at Amazon.com.
No, it's powerful. Yeah, it's powerful because it's true. I mean, I felt that way for so many years. I was like, I'm drowning. Like, mm-hmm. I'm trying not to drown. And yep. To try to explain to someone, like, no, I used to be tired if I, like, had a busy week. Now I'm so tired that I can barely think straight. And
yeah.
And then, yeah, you deal with kids who are sick, progressively sicker. And it's this unfathomable crisis that goes on for years and years. And mm-hmm. You're right. People have no comprehension of the amount of time you spend waiting to see specialists, the amount of money, energy, all that stuff, and time again, come back with nothing.
Yep. No answers and no, or you go there and it's just more abuse of, you know, well, like, you're the picture perfect of health. Like, hearing that is just like another kick in the, it's just a kick because it's like, I'm not, like, look at me, like, I don't. You know, look at these kids. They're not healthy.
Yeah. There's something obviously wrong.
Yeah. And just because you can't find it doesn't mean it's not there.
Yeah.
Well, and the whole circling feeling, because when our son started going to the homeschooling thing, then the pressure was on all of a sudden that, well, how come you're not producing anything? Because it's half and half. Like, he's supposed to be, he has to still answer to teachers every week, but it's at home kind of thing.
So the pressure's on you.
Yeah. So now we've got, you know, him here all the time. By this point, we had been seeing a naturopath, which brought out these, he is such an easygoing, sweet boy, like, normally. And for almost a year, we dealt with these rage episodes that I would not wish on my worst enemy. They were devastating. He would become this, like, demon-like person, he wasn't there. He'd be trying to bite us, trying to hit us, trying to, you know, he'd be almost like foaming at the mouth kind of thing. And like, it would sometimes take two of us to try and hold him down. Like, my daughter would take the little guys and go and hide because, you know, like going up in a room and she'd be playing with them just to kind of, so that they didn't have to deal with it. Like,
yeah.
And it crushed all of us. Like, it was a really, really hard thing, because after, sometimes it would take anywhere from an hour to 3 hours for him to come out of this. But when he did, he was exhausted. He'd usually sleep hours, and then he'd be back to our sweet boy after that. But so this was going on through homeschooling. So homeschooling was a battle, because you know what it's like when you can't even think, and to try and think is so, it uses up more energy than, and you're already on empty.
Yeah.
And your brain hurts. Like, it's so, that trying to think, like, to do something. And so it would cause this battle. But at the same time, we're hearing words getting thrown around, like, what's the word when you don't send your kids to school?
Truancy.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God, like, that's all we need now. And then there's, you know, okay, well, what's going on in the house? So, oh, I see. So the parents have had some, you know, relationship issues or whatever. And it's like, well, let's put that in the file. I'm like, doesn't everybody, like, and we're dealing with a lot of stuff here. I think we're doing okay for the amount of stress we've got. Yeah. But, you know, yeah, we fight sometimes, but it's nothing to put in your file.
Yeah.
So there was that. And it's like, well, what's going on in the house? And, you know, all of a sudden it's like, you know, we went from trying to get answers to everything turning on us. Like, okay, so you're not sending him to school. He's not, we need him to go to be attending school and, you know, producing some work here. And so then that would put even more stress to try and, you know, and then so we'd be like, hey, you got to put in like a couple hours. And, you know, he'd try, and then it would trigger one of these episodes. And it was terrible. Like, just a horrible, horrible, horrible time. Like, Christmas Eve, I guess, I finally called my parents and was like, you got to come get him. Like, and that was another hard day. It was 3 hours of complete, a lot of stuff broken in the house, a lot of screaming, yelling, you know, him hitting us. And, you know, he's crying while he's doing it. Like, he's just, and I just like, and then I've got my own stuff going on where I started crashing around the same time he started crashing. And then I had started the treatment, but I dropped off early because we couldn't afford to treat both of us. So I wanted it to go to him because I felt like he was worse off, but I was crashing hard. I was getting lost in familiar places. I was having those seizures. I was, you know, really, really struggling. And I was having, you know, my own, like that Bartonella, it brings out some pretty, you know, you snap, like, you get to the point, you're okay, and then all of a sudden you snap and you sound like a crazy person.
Yeah. And yet you're not, because anyone suffering on that level would have the exact same reaction.
Yeah. And it's, well, and nobody gets to see that level of the suffering. They just see the snapping crazy person.
Yeah. Like,
you know, and so he was out, like, yeah, we couldn't find him. I had snapped. I finally couldn't take it anymore. It was 3 hours of trying to fight this. And I was like, freaked out, started yelling back. He left, which, you know, it was obviously not the way to handle it, but it was, and he left. I couldn't find him. We started looking everywhere for him. I finally found him beside our fence. He was out with no shirt on and just pants and sitting in the snow, and just said, "Mom, I just want to die." And he's like, "You need to get away from me." At that time, he hated me so much. He had so much hate for me because, you know, I wasn't being supportive at that moment either, but before that. And so I picked him up and like, "You're not dying. You're not." I said, "This isn't you, Andrew. This is Lyme. It's doing this to you." So I picked him up and he had no energy to hit me anymore, but he was trying just to hit me to let him go. And I carried him inside. It was through probably 3 feet of snow, and carried him in the garage. And I called my mom and said, "You got to come get him because he just needs to be away."
Yeah.
And be, you know, just have a couple of days of just away. And that is probably the worst day of my life. I mean, he looks back and that's, you know, for a kid to have to go through that and the guilt that he'd be feeling for all those times of thinking that he's this crazy kid and, you know, I wouldn't. And that's the other thing too. I wanted to get him psychologist help or have someone just to talk to. But unless they've understand Lyme, you can't just send them to anybody.
Yeah.
Because they're gonna take them away. Like if I would have let somebody in the professional, you know, like let a doctor see what we were dealing with, they would have locked him up. Because when those episodes came on, he did look like, you know, it wasn't good. But
yeah.
Instead
of getting to the root issue of why is this happening, you said it, like it's getting turned around on you, even though no one in the medical realm can figure out anything.
Yeah.
It's you by default.
Yeah. We have no answers. So it must be you and then push some pharmaceuticals that are, you know, going to make things worse. Like they want to put him on this and that. And, you know, those drugs weren't doing anything but making him sicker. And it's funny, actually, our neurologist had him on, Valproix, I think it is. Anyways, when we put him on that medication for his epilepsy, we had to sign a waiver because, I mean, it could cause kidney damage and failure. And that was a really horrible thing to sign, to say, okay, yeah, I'll put this in his body. But after getting through our naturopath, a 23andMe test, we realized that his body makes more ammonia than normal. So, and together with that drug can raise the ammonia levels so bad that it destroys your liver. And before knowing this, just with my gut instinct, I was like, he's not on these drugs anymore. It's not doing anything. We know it's the Lyme. They won't acknowledge it, but we know it. We're building his immune system. We're treating, like at that point, when the rage started, it's because we were actually killing the Lyme. That's why the rage and the BART, that's why the rage kind of came in. But I got him off all pharmaceuticals, and that was, of course, written in the file that, you know, mother is not putting him on the medication that he needs, and kind of this little paragraph of how horrible of a mother I am.
Wow.
But yeah. And so then after he got some, because his levels kept showing up and the blood work high, and you know, I said, they're not working anyways. And I said, you know, you guys had 6 years with this kid, and we are no further ahead than we were 6 years ago. In fact, he's now worse off. He's can't attend school. He's, you know, so you guys are obviously, like, your turn's up.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to say after 2 years of working with naturopath for him, and then now kind of on our own, he's back. Like he's probably the healthiest one in the family now.
Wow.
Yeah. No mood. He's our sweet boy. He's sweetest 13-year-old you'd ever meet. So I don't know, everybody that says that naturopaths are, don't, you know, when they put them down, like they're the true saviors for me.
Yeah, I just can't help think, Renee, like, as you're telling that story, if you hadn't fought for him in that way.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just really sad that as parents, you have kids who cannot get to school, who cannot learn. There are no answers within the medical realm, and yet you're ultimately held responsible. Mm-hmm. And you risk a lot just in requiring adequate care.
Yeah. And it weighs so, like, it takes the stress level that is already big to such a, like, if that wasn't there, that worry of, you know, the consequences of, and the worry of having to, like, I have MRI things that I learned how to read. I've learned how to read, like, you shouldn't have to become a expert on all these professions. Like, it's so, it's just like that rock that sits on top of you. Every time a kid gets sick, like, you got to figure it out. It's up to you to figure it out because they're not going to. They're going to say it's fine, and you know it's not fine. Like, I know my stuff because I research. I put in probably 40 hours of research a week because you know how it is. We still don't have the answers, but got to figure out something because nobody else is.
Yeah.
And they're not getting any better. Like, they're getting worse. And one has major kind of, I figure, PANDAS and OCD. And, like, he gets in these things. Like, at 3-4 years old, he wanted to, like, I was looking at trying to figure out how to close off our, like, we have one of those foyers that kind of look over, like, from the top stairs to the front door. You look down.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to jump it because he wanted to kill himself. Out of nowhere, a four-year-old talks about killing himself. Like, that's not normal.
Yeah.
And he talks about his dreams and his, you know, and he sits there awake, like, at night. Like, after, so we do story and snuggle every night. And I'll go to check later. And his eyes are open and he's trying. He's like, I don't want to fall asleep because that's where the nightmares come.
Hmm.
And he's, you know, this little boy, like, he's just, like, they're all dealing with so much. Like, childhood should not be like this.
Yeah.
Like, you shouldn't be in pain and trying to, you know, these kids suck up so much pain, and that's not right. And then, you know, you go to bed and it's like they all are like, you're tucking them in and each one is kind of, well, this hurts, you know, can I, like, this hurts. And they're not saying it. Like, you can see the pain in them.
Hmm. Yeah.
And yet, it's just really, it's hard.
Yeah.
Like, the school labels kids as, like, right now I'm kind of dealing with parent-teacher interviews coming on, and I'm like, do I dare, now that we have four kids in the same school, do I dare even say, like, listen, this is what we're dealing with. So when he's freaking out, like, right now, because, you know, right now his OCD is in, like, overdrive, or, like, do I wait till an incident happens? Or, you know, like, there's always so many things to consider.
Yeah, there are no easy answers.
Mm-mm. And nobody to help, and nobody gets it. Nobody understands. Like, it's like, if I wait till something happens, and because the one that with the hot OCD, like, he gets these really weird things, kind of ticks and stuff that go on when he's flaring up, and his is a lot in his brain and his stomach. Like, I can't wait if something happens, and then he's got nothing to go on. But I have nothing to document what's going on because naturopaths don't count. And, you know, it's like, I don't know. It's, and there's just no, if something does happen, like, I've had people where their kids got locked up and pumped full of drugs that, you know, completely destroyed them. And if these doctors would just kind of get over their egos and pay attention, like, there's a lot of kids that could be saved.
Yeah, set free.
Mm-hmm.
So where do you find hope and inspiration? Because I hope that our audience understands, and I think that they do. I mean, it really is. The weight you are carrying as a parent is way beyond anything normal. And yet, you, like you said, you still have to keep figuring it out. You still have to keep going. It doesn't matter if you're so tired that you feel, you know, you're having your own issues. They have issues that have to be dealt with. And just the the demand on something that extends for years. So where do you find inspiration? What do you feel like it's even cost you financially? Like to treat one kid and kind of get him back up to a stable place, and yet you're needing to do it again with either yourself or other kids.
Well, I think, for cost wise, we had, we got a disability for our son, like a back pay of having a child with a disability. Cause he's coded as a severe medical case in school. And that's because of those neuropsych evaluations. So anyways, we got a back pay, which like somehow came at the right time, but it's $50,000, and that's completely gone to his treatment.
Yeah.
And right now what we're doing is just kind of, we had a natural path that we were kind of seeing. And so we have the tools, we know, you know, right now we're just working at building our immune systems, getting them in complete top shape, everybody, kind of on our own maintenance program so that nobody gets worse. You know, I know we're not probably going to kill off the Lyme doing this, but I wouldn't want to do that myself anyways with the kids. But we need to at least get our systems to be able to fight it.
Yeah.
So we're kind of on a program right now, and it's probably at least 1,000-ish a month, and we could be doing more.
Yeah.
It would, we're doing the bare minimal of, you know, immune boosting. This wouldn't even cover, like, if we actually started getting rid of stuff. So what's kind of kept me going, I don't know, like, everybody always talks about finding God and stuff, but really that, like, a spiritual higher power is, and when that day you finally understand what giving it to that higher power is, was a huge shift for me. Because before that, I was beyond drowning. Like I was at the point where I'm like, I was even mad. I was mad at the fact that suicide wasn't even an option for me, because I've got kids that need me. So I can't even, like, the pain and the stress and this life is hell. But I can't even just end it, because that's been taken away from me even. So once I don't know how it came about, but I was kind of just doing affirmations, and, you know, me and the kids would look up different prayers of healing, and kind of look up a Buddha prayer one day, and then I'd look up, you know, a Catholic one another day, or whatever. Like I don't believe that there's, in my opinion that there's, I think it's one for everybody, but so we kind of just anything that was positive and healing. And so that kind of grew from there. And there's been a huge learning curve for me of kind of where my beliefs kind of go and what's going on and stuff in the world. But those beliefs, like, you know, I don't know if people say that they hear God talking to them. Well, for a while, my big thing I thought that I was put on, and I tell the kids, I'm like, you know what? We were given this because He knew we were strong enough to take it. I used to hate that comment. Like, He only gives you what you can handle. I used to hate when people said that, because I'd feel like I've taken too much already. I can't handle anymore.
Yeah.
But, you know, I really feel now that, you know, I say to the kids, we're going to be so much stronger at the end of this, and we're going to have so much compassion and empathy, and we're going to be able to help so many people after. So this is why we're given this. But I'm a big awareness when it was the epilepsy I thought I was just dealing with. Like, I would fight for that, because that when I don't feel like I have any control, I have to put it that energy somewhere.
Yeah.
So bring in awareness and feeling like I'm making it, you know, doing that so that, you know, I could either help someone else that maybe didn't recognize it, or getting an awareness so that the people dealing with it don't have to maybe struggle so hard. But I really thought that was my fight here, and that was my purpose. And I've been, you know, really actively involved in bringing awareness. And all of a sudden it came to me. I was meditating one day and it said, that's not my purpose. I still don't know what it is, but it's not to heal, to do this for everybody else necessarily. But I think us going through this we're learning, like we're going to be okay, but we're learning what we need to learn because we all need to learn something. It's what we're here for. And I don't know exactly all the answers yet, but I think just letting that go and letting we're going to be okay. I don't know how yet, but we will be. And it just took a huge weight. Like it's not, I don't know. It was a big change because I was not like that before at all. But I grew up kind of a Catholic religion and always believed in God, but never did anything about it. But yeah, just higher powers and giving it to someone else is what kind of has gotten all of us through, I think, now.
What a journey.
Yeah, it's not one that I would have picked, to be honest. I think that, I don't know, all of us, you look at the Lyme community and, like, nobody can understand what these people, like, there's so many amazing people that are completely in hell and still, you know, if somebody needs to talk that day, you know, you've often seen on the sites, like, people are, okay, well, I feel like, you know, complete a mess today, but yeah, I'm here for you. Like, you don't get that anywhere else.
Yeah, it is. It's a weird mix because there is a lot of toxicity and negativity and skepticism and arguing.
There's
a lot of negative stuff, but there's a lot of really positive stuff too. And I see it. I'm probably 4 or 5 days a week. I'm on there for decent chunks of time. And it is. It's a lifesaver. It's a lifeline, which is why we chose to do podcasting, because you're reaching people that are completely isolated and alone. And they maybe only have internet.
Yeah.
They may not have the food in their fridge. They may not have the medication they need, but they do have internet access. And, you know, it's one of the benefits of being in a global community to some extent. And you do, you see people who are suffering step out and help people on whatever level they can.
Yep. Well, and to hear, like, you know those, and I know you know this, but those days when they are so dark, like you're so thankful the next day that you woke up and, you know, you didn't let that desperation, that horrible, horrible mindset take over you.
Yeah.
But to sit there and, you know, I remember watching your guys' video and I was like, oh my God, when you see somebody else that gets it, and to just have that validation that you're not weak, you're not all the self-thought or, you know, the things that you continually tell yourself, you know, I'm not good enough because I can't keep up or whatever it is, right? Just to hear someone else say that out loud, like, and is so, oh, like that's a savior. Like it's so therapeutic to understand that, finally get recognition that this is, you know, it's not in your head.
I know. How sad. I mean, it's such a simple thing. Okay, Lori Dennis and I are recording a project. She wrote Lyme Madness from a psychotherapist and a parent perspective. And she says that. She says, so either there's something going on, like Lyme, that's affecting us, or millions of people around the world are all lying.
Yeah.
And we gain nothing. You gain nothing with this illness. It is all loss. Even if you get an ounce of sympathy or something, like I get maybe that's comforting to some people, but you are losing on 1,000 levels a day and you gain nothing. And truly, like, just an ounce of validation goes so far.
Oh, it is. That can carry you, like, for your next battle, like, and give you that strength when, like, yeah, validation. Like, I can't even explain to people that don't get it, that aren't in it, how powerful it is. And just to hear, like, A, you're not alone, and B, you know, it's not in your head. And I get it. Like, those are powerful things. Like, it's amazing.
Renee, what would you tell other parents who are fighting and advocating for their kids, who know something is wrong? What would you tell them?
I would say you always got to go with that gut feeling, because it, especially in moms, I don't know how it is for the dads if they get it, but it for moms, don't ever let anybody tell you that you're not on, because moms know your babies and fight for them. And just keep, you got to stay on top of the researching. Like, everybody's like, well, you know, why do you drive yourself crazy doing all that research? And I said, because it's power is, you know, is knowledge is power.
Yeah. What and you don't know will hurt you.
Will hurt you. Yeah. Digging your head in the sand will, you know, and you cannot depend on somebody else to save them. It's up to you. And it sucks. It's a hard thing to carry, but nobody's going to fight for them like you, like parents are going to.
Yeah.
And, you know, in these groups too, like, it's just the best place to find really good information, unfortunately, is Facebook, because that's where the people in the trenches are. And, you know, it's a great thing to have. Like, I don't like Facebook necessarily for any other things, but my groups are like my lifeline.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. I feel the same way. In fact, sometimes Facebook, because I work, do a lot of work within Facebook, it's not so much a social thing for me anymore. I kind of have to psych myself up for it sometimes, but it'll be interesting just to see, because even like they talk about the AIDS epidemic in the 80s, the difference between us and them is we have the internet.
Yes.
So we're not sitting in libraries, you know, looking over medical documents. We're doing it from home, but you're right. No one else is going to advocate for you or your kids, and you have to fight in whatever capacity you're able to do that in.
Yep. Yeah. And you're going to have to take people, your family telling you, you know, you're going to have everybody, whether they are intentionally doing it or not, against you in some form or another. And that's a hard thing too. Like, I remember, you know, the fact, like, my family's on board now, they get it. But at the first, it was kind of like, oh, are you sure? And is this, you know, are you sure about that? And kind of, and I knew it. I knew when we found out, like, all six of us have Lyme, and we got our test back from the naturopath, I was like, oh, bang, like the light went on. I'm like, this is the why for our whole life. This is it. This is a, you know, and the amount of research I've done, I'm like, yeah, like, it just doesn't, nothing phases me about it anymore. I'm like, that, we are the perfect picture, you know, of what congenital Lyme looks like and what years of dealing with it looks like. And there's no questions in my head, because I still get it once in a while. They're like, well, you know, are you guys sure that that's what you're dealing with? And I'm like, I don't need a test to tell me anymore. Like, I'm past getting, like, the, you know, medical, and I'm doing the finger quotations, but, you know, what that test, I don't need that. But yeah, it's a crazy, I don't know. I look at all these moms and I'm just like, or, you know, or in dads too. And I'm like, people just don't get, like, what the fight that they're going through.
Yeah, no, they don't. And they probably won't. And I remember even my mom, I had a brother who got meningitis at a year old, and he had severe brain damage and seizures his whole life, and was physically able to do things, but cognitively never really progressed much beyond an 18-month-old. And he was very difficult. He required, you know, he had seizures and required medications and lab tests and all this stuff that was very expensive and time consuming. And he just really controlled our family. And I remember my mom saying that at some point she just quit trying to explain to her friends what it was like, because you had to know where he was every 30 seconds, because he would hop over the fence or get on a bike and ride away and not be able to talk. And, you know, same things when he would get out and we weren't checking on him every 30 seconds, then the police would get involved and blame it on my parent. You know, it was just this nightmare. I know, but it's really the same with Lyme. You know, you have to come to this place where you realize other people are not going to understand, and you're going to do whatever you need to do, and you have to be okay with that.
Yeah. Yes, and like the judging, it doesn't matter, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's your family, and that's all that. You put those boundaries up, and that's another thing for parents is, their opinions don't matter, and put those put those boundaries in place and follow them.
Yeah.
That was another savior for me, trying to please everybody and justify yourself all the time of why, you know, you don't want them around the sick kid over there because, you know, when you've already got Lyme and a bunch of others, you know, when your immune system is so weak, it can't take another hit.
Right.
And, or why, you know, I'm pretty anal about bedtimes because my kids can't afford to, you know, we have once in a while where, yeah, they stay up and you got to let them be kids too. But, you know, I don't want them up till God knows what time or, and cause the next day they're sick, it takes them out. Like it means a whole lot of hell for us.
Yeah.
It means that, you know, you guys might be tired the one day and have some cranky kids, but this could take us out
for a weeks. Long
time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I thought, you know, where are you then when, you know, we're going and doing like anytime it's like there's a sleepover, like there's going swimming, you got to think of things. Like there's so much that, you know, and I get like, oh, don't be so paranoid. But I'm like, yeah, come with my life.
Right.
And you won't be saying that because, yeah, it's stuff that you have to consider. And now, yeah, I stopped caring. Like I don't attend a lot of functions just because I'm just too tired. I need the rest and it's a perfect time for the kids to, I like to have the house to myself to be able to rest. And at first I was offending a lot of people and I think they get it now, but I had to let that go too. Like yeah. I'm not doing it because I don't want to be around you guys. I'm not doing it because I'm trying to hurt you. I need to take care of me so I can be there for them now.
Yeah.
And I have to do what it has. Like I haven't had a, and I miss everybody, but I just have to,
you have to survive.
Yep.
Yeah. Renee, thank you so much for your time and your advocacy work. And I know that your story is just going to make an impact on all the other moms and dads out there who are fighting for their kids. Cause it is not something that can be handled casually.
No. And yeah, so I thank you for doing what you guys do because it's definitely helped me on quite a few occasions listening and reading your guys' stuff. So it's just, it's a good thing to have it out there. Like I can't imagine not having these resources.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you too.
Wishing your doctors could communicate and come up with a cohesive plan specific to your medical needs and genetics? At Invita Medical Center, they offer a team-style approach, giving you the opportunity to heal. In addition to a commitment of providing radical love and care for their patients, they are strategically located in sunny Arizona because Arizona offers the best integrative medical laws in the country. Call today to speak with one of their patient care coordinators. You can find them online at Invita.com.
Disease is contrary to life. Therefore, wherever disease exists, life must also fight to exist.
Good job fighting, Lyme fighters. Keep it up. We'll see you next time.
Lyme Voice contains general information about medical conditions and treatments. The information is not advice and should not be treated as such. Okay, Lincoln?
Okay.
The medical information on Lyme Voice is provided as is without any representations, warranties, expressed or implied. Okay?
Okay.
Lyme Voice makes no representations or warranties in relation to the medical information on this podcast. You must not rely on the information on this podcast as an alternative to medical advice from your doctor or other professional health care provider. If you have any specific questions about your medical matter, you should consult your doctor or other professional health care provider. And for you consult your parents, okay?
Okay.
If you think you may be suffering from any medical condition, you should seek immediate medical attention. You should never delay seeking medical advice, disregard medical advice, or discontinue medical treatment because of information on this podcast. Got it, Lincoln?
Got it.